All participants, thank you for standing by. Your meeting is ready to begin. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Yourcast Quarterly Report Conference Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Chris Ocean. Please go ahead, Mr. Ocean.
Hi, I'd just like to start off by reading the Safe Harbor Statement before we begin the meeting. You're reminded that certain statements made in this conference call and our responses to various questions may constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of securities laws. These forward-looking statements, such as statements about commercial opportunities and any financial outlook or guidance for Earthcast, rely on a number of assumptions concerning future events that are believed to be reasonable, but are subject to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors, many of which are outside the company's control, and which could cause the actual results, performance, or achievements of the company to be materially different. While the company believes that the assumptions concerning future events are reasonable, we caution that there are inherent difficulties in predicting certain important factors that could affect the future performance or results of our business. The company expressly disclaims any intention or obligation to revise or publicly update any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as may be required by applicable securities laws. During the course of this call, we may also refer to certain metrics such as EBITDA, not recognized under IFRS reporting standards. Non-IFRS measures do not have any standardized meaning under IFRS, and therefore are unlikely to be comparable to similar measures presented by other issuers. Earthcast believes that these measures may offer useful supplemental information, but they are subject to inherent uncertainties and limitations, rely on various assumptions by the company, and should therefore not be relied on for the purpose of making an investment decision. For a complete discussion of the risks, uncertainties, and assumptions which may lead to actual financial results or performance being different from that contained in our forward-looking statements, please refer to the company's prospectus supplement dated June 24, 2015, to its short-form-based prospectus and amended and restated short-form-based shelf prospectus dated May 15, 2015, as each such shelf was amended on June 19, 2015, all of which are available under Earthcast's SEDAR profile at www.sedar.com.
So thanks, Chris, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our quarterly shareholder call for the quarter ending September 30th, 2015. I'd like to start by again thanking the incredible team that we have here at Earthcast in 8 offices spread across 4 countries. The ability and eagerness to take on and overcome the challenges thrown our way is remarkable. We're all amazed at what we've been able to collectively accomplish and the opportunities that have been presented to us because of that success. It isn't entirely unique to our business, of course, but it does seem that the more success that we have, the more opportunities are presented to us, and we look forward to being able to announce these as they become material. Our vision to democratize imagery of Earth and space will both broaden the access and improve everyone's ability to exploit imagery of Earth from space beyond today's specialist and professional user base. While possibly a simple ambition to express, it certainly is not a simple goal to achieve. I'm convinced that the amount of change coming to the Earth observation industry over the next few years will be unlike anything we've seen before, and I believe that Earthcast will be at the heart of that. We are approaching this goal with a crawl, walk, run strategy in a very phased approach. We are building a low-cost, high-performance new entrant into today's traditional Earth observation industry while also making substantial investment in an open-source, cloud-based web platform and infrastructure to support emerging new market opportunities as well as our long-term vision. Given how quickly our business and industry are evolving, we held significant milestones, but arguably, none more significant than this last 3-month period. Before we take some questions, there's a few points I'd like to make about this quarter. A defining moment for Earthcast was the acquisition of Deimos Imaging, which we completed during the quarter. And as we have noted before, the acquisition of Deimos is a significant catalyst for Earthcast on many different fronts. It increases our data archive, improves and expands on our space collection capacity, broadens our customer base, is financially accretive, and finally, and most importantly, brings over 50 new employees in support of our long-term vision. I'm happy to report that the integration with Deimos continues to go exceptionally well. We are implementing a 100-day plan that has moved along materially and is very much on track, frankly, probably better than we could have hoped. We have prioritized business development and revenue synergies in the plan, but are already seeing some early technical and operational benefits as well. We have embedded technical teams back and forth between North America and Spain, including a team from Earthcast that is there right now, standing up parallel processing capabilities to further push our HRC latency down. Second, I'm also pleased to report that Q3 represented the first quarter during which all four of our Earth observation sensors contributed to generating revenue. Deimos 1, Deimos 2, and a high-resolution video camera, the HRC. This is a significant technical and operational achievement. EarthCast generated $4.2 million in Earth observation data revenue in Q3 from approximately 20 different customers. Deimos 2 and HRC are at very low utilization levels when measured by revenues, but are very active in support of our building sales funnel, as you might expect at this point in the early sales cycle. As an update to our plans to build and operate the world's first integrated SAR and optical constellation, we're also pleased to report that the company has advanced negotiations with an anchor tenant customer for the constellation and has signed a non-binding MOU for $175 million U.S. This MOU is with the company's existing $65 million engineering services and data customer that was announced last fall. A portion of the original $65 million was for Gen 2 data sales, which under the terms of this MOU will be repurposed towards the funding of the constellation. Right now, total signed MOUs for funding of the constellation stands at $370 million U.S. Assuming these MOUs are converted into binding definitive agreements, these customers will provide substantive support and funding for the constellation. Our sales funnel now includes about a dozen different parties, all in various stages of negotiations. We are extremely happy with the reception and momentum that we've had from prospective customers to date and the progress that we are making in moving these MOUs through to definitive binding agreements. Point number four, the increasing momentum of the constellation in response to customer interest that we've received has prompted the company to accelerate the constellation's implementation timeline by redirecting the Gen 2 sensor development program currently underway to the constellation. The company will no longer proceed with the installation of the sensors on the International Space Station. This decision was not driven by a change in view of the International Space Station as a powerful Earth observation platform, which is consistent with our ambitions to democratize access to Earth observation imagery, or to any change in the tremendous support that we have and continue to receive from many of our ISS partners. Rather, this decision was influenced by a combination of schedule slippage, the emerging potential for overlap with our previously announced constellation plans, and finally, our desire to remain as capital efficient as possible. We believe EarthCast is in the fortunate position of being an opportunity-rich company, but we must also remain vigilant and focused, both of which requires constant reevaluation of our goals and priorities. Fifth, on the web platform, we're also happy to report steady continued progress. We have made the very important transition from being in a closed beta, meaning only access to a limited number of approved app developers under NDA, to an open beta, which basically means that we have removed the NDA requirement and now accepting a wider set of app developers into our ecosystem. We have rolled out our foundational APIs and have a large number of developers using them and providing excellent feedback. We have an ambitious roadmap to add many more features and data sets in the coming months. So with all of that said, we have a number of meaningful accounting items impacting our financial statements this quarter. And as such, I'd like to ask Isa, our CFO, to make a few clarifying remarks.
Thanks, Scott. As mentioned, there are several notable changes in our financials in this past quarter, which we felt warranted further explanation. This quarter's results were affected by two significant events, which are more fully described in the financial statements and the accompanying management discussion and analysis. It should be noted at the outset that the acquisition of Deimos Imaging was completed on July 15, 2015, and as a result, our consolidated quarterly reports include 75 days of Deimos results. The first notable event was that with the declaration of initial operating capability, IOC, on the HRC, our Gen 1 cameras were deemed available for commercial operations during this fiscal quarter, which in turn triggered accounting treatments that are new to this quarter. The first change due to the declaration of IOC is that we began recognizing certain non-cash revenues and costs in connection with our barter arrangement on the International Space Station. In the 3 and 9 months ended September 30th, 2015, we recorded $5.75 million of non-cash revenue for services provided to Energia. We also recorded the same amount of non-cash expenses in the quarter as an offset. This treatment will continue for the balance of the camera's expected lifetime aboard the ISS, which has been estimated to the end of 2021. Second, we began to depreciate our investment in the camera equipment and the associated ground segment infrastructure over their estimated remaining useful life. For the quarter, this added approximately $1.63 million to our non-cash depreciation expenses. And the third change in the accounting treatment that arose because of IOC is that our ongoing maintenance and improvements of our ground segment infrastructure and services from our ISS partner are now being charged to R&D and cost of sales respectively. In the previous quarter, these costs of approximately $2.5 million were capitalized to our intangible assets on the balance sheet. In this quarter, this amount was charged to our P&L. This was a change in our accounting treatment for these expenses and not a quarter-to-quarter increase in our cash costs for these categories. Another item I'd like to talk about is how to give you a better understanding of how the revenue mix and the level of government grants and the customer-funded R&D and the changes to capitalization accounting for ongoing ground segment expenses can influence any measure of EBITDA on a quarter-to-quarter basis, thereby masking operating leverage within our business. To start, we have broken out our revenue by segment, namely engineering services revenue of $5.1 million, Earth observation data sales of $4.2 million, and government R&D grants of $400,000. Each segment has a different impact on reported costs depending on their mix. As expected, Earth observation data typically carries contribution margins of between 80 and 85%. Engineering services, while also very profitable, typically carries lower contribution margins and can be lumpy based on the timing of pass-through costs. Finally, government grants carry little to no positive contribution margin but add to consolidated revenues. Our R&D expenses are heavily supported by government grants and direct customer funding related to our engineering services revenue. A simple way of thinking about our R&D expense is similar to cost of goods sold related to government grants and engineering services revenue, and is being directly invested in support of our development work toward our previously announced constellation. These government grants are an obviously positive, non-dilutive source of financial support for our development work surrounding our constellation that can also cause higher R&D expenses and adjusted EBITDA variability from quarter to quarter. Further, an additional $1 million of R&D expenses in Q3 also represented a combination of external discontinued Gen 2-related costs or unfunded constellation development investment, which we begin to expect to flow to our balance sheet in future periods. So to summarize, if we compare quarter-to-quarter results, adjusted revenue in Q3 was approximately $9.3 million, and adjusted EBITDA, if we were to use the Q2 accounting treatments, would be approximately a loss of $1
million. So thanks, Issa. I'll just end by commentating, before we take some questions, on where our business is heading from a financial perspective. The company has firm backlog contracts for both engineering services and data sales of over $100 million, plus another $30 million in options. In this quarter, we generated revenue from all four sensors. This points to EarthCast growing rapidly as a new supplier into the Earth observation industry with a diversified data offering and a disruptive cost structure. So with all of that said, Samantha, can you open the call to any questions, please?
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel your question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. The first question is from Noel Atkinson from Clarus Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, folks. Thanks for taking my call. It looks like you had a nice quarter for imagery sales in the quarter. I wondered if you could give us a little bit of sense of, you know, how the imagery sales performed relative to expectations, particularly with the HRC and MRC, and do you expect to see, you know, some healthy growth into Q4 from those levels?
Yeah, thanks, Noel. I'm going to have Wade Larson, our president and COO, answer that question.
Hey, Noel. You know, we don't break out revenue by sensor, but rather by segment. We are making a bit of an effort here to give you guys more visibility by, you know, data sales as a whole from engineering services, as you've seen. But I would say that we're quite pleased with the way the MRC and HRC sales funnels are shaping up, we feel pretty good about it at this stage, even though, to be clear, we still have not declared FOC yet on the HRC. That's something we expect in early 2016.
Okay. All right. And then in terms of the Constellation and moving from Gen 2 directly to the Constellation, you say in the documentation that it's a 2019-2020 anticipated launch date, yet you're hoping to do this faster. So do you think that you can launch sooner than 2019?
Yeah, that's a big question. I don't think we want to update the timeline that we've put out there. Certainly when you start looking at projects like this, they're not small. As you know, space engineering takes a long time. You typically plan a number of years in advance, which is what we're doing. So I don't think we want to start saying that this is going up too much sooner than that, but I certainly can say that we're extremely happy with the progress that we've made so far, and we look forward to kind of continuing that, but I don't think we want to be moving those dates up right now.
Okay, and then just one last question, I'll get back in the queue. In terms of the decision to migrate to the Constellation, was there any input from a potential customer that would have, you know, led you to move to a Constellation? Was there a potential customer that would say, okay, I'm more interested in the Constellation than I am than buying from Gen 2?
Yeah, go ahead, Wade.
Yeah. It's really a quite insightful question, Noel. In fact, the response from the customers to the Constellation has been overwhelmingly so positive that our sense was that it just made good business sense to redirect the program. It's not that we're shutting down Gen 2. All of the sort of technology development that is underway in Gen 2 is completely applicable to the Constellation. But it's rather that there's just been a very, very positive sense of market momentum, customer-driven momentum for the Constellation, that this really became quite apparently obvious, really, is the right business move.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. The next question is from Yael Ophir from Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Congrats on the quarter, guys, and the new MOU that you guys signed. In terms of the demand here seems very significant. How should we think about additional announcements related to MOUs? Are you guys going to look for, you know, in quarter to announce that those type of events, or are you going to look for quarterly updates like you have today?
Yeah, it's probably going to be a combination, to be honest. These are, you know, I think we've talked about this before. These are long, complicated, technically deep type discussions. They're ongoing. I don't think we should be expecting for announcements on a weekly, monthly basis. They're going to happen when they happen, frankly. It just so happened that this one, you know, kind of lined up right now. I don't think we want to give any kind of commitment to, you know, these are going to be happening on a, you know, regular basis, for lack of a better way to put it. They will happen when they happen. To counter that, of course, and Wade just talked about this, the interest that we've had in the Constellation has been overwhelming, perhaps. It's vast, and so, you know, you can pull some analogies out of those two statements.
Okay, and then just to understand, obviously you're accelerating the plan here. I imagine that you need to have at least four pairs signed to actually get this launch. So you guys are basically perceiving the demand that's going to convert into MOUs and actual letters of intent, I guess, in the coming few months. But how's the timeline looking in terms of, you know, when you actually start the build-out phase? Is it still kind of late 2016? Is it mid-2016 now? And in terms of revenue recognition, I know every contract's different, but how should we think about that, both margins to you guys, but also revenue recognition to the entire company?
Yeah, let me take, Wade here again. Let me just take the first part of that question. you know, it's certainly not as simple as what you've just said, that we're selling pears. In fact, the other sort of proposition we're making to our customers and partners in this is that they can just do large-scale access buys to the satellites, indeed to multiple satellites. And so you're going to see some variability. In some cases, it might be quite substantial variability over as to what an individual sort of anchor tenant customer might be putting into the constellation, because they're getting different things out. So the sales cycle and the selling process itself are much more varied and nuanced than what you just sort of implied there.
Hi, Alan, and it's Issa here. Just to follow up on that, Wade let me set it up really well. Because of that, every contract will be different, every term and condition will be different, and as such, we just cannot comment on the revenue recognition at this point in time. It's to be waiting, to be determined.
Okay, I appreciate that. Just shifting gears here, obviously, this is the first quarter you've shown data sales, both from the MRC, HRC, and obviously the Demis 1 and 2 post-acquisition. It seems that everything's going as planned, or I guess better than expected in terms of data sales. But can you talk about the backlog, what you're seeing? You talked about kind of numerically, but how much interest is there? How many, like, can you guys disclose maybe how many resellers now you have globally selling both products, and maybe any more input you can give on that? That'd be great, and I'll pass the line.
Yeah, thanks, Jill. I don't think we want to get into the exact number of distributors that we have. Deimos on its own had a significant amount. Earthcast, of course, on its own had its own growing number of distributors. There wasn't a whole lot of crossover between the two, frankly, just because both companies were generally going after different markets. I think generally we can say that there is a limited amount of supply in the industry, particularly over certain parts of the world. And so Earthcast and Deimos are coming into this industry as a whole with more supply. We have a broad data set, four different sensors, some that's unique, of course, and some that just works really well for the customers. So the demand for the data is there. The demand for the data is there. And as you can see in our numbers, it kind of supports that. I don't think we want to get into the exact number of distributors, because some of that is a little confidential from a industry standpoint.
Okay. Can you also speak to maybe how much direct sales versus via the channel of distributors?
I think we'd put that into the same category where we don't really want to break it down. The larger customers, of course, are a little more direct, and some of the smaller customers are typically through channels. We don't really want to get into, you know, exactly how much revenue per sensor and what number, what's the revenue that comes from a certain amount of customers. That's kind of not how we manage it. It's more about data sets and segments, as opposed to that kind of breakdown.
Okay, great. I'll pass the line, and I'll hop back in with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Gil.
Thank you. The next question is from Daniel Wong from Salmon Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, congratulations on getting all sensors up and running. How should we think about costs next quarter in 2016? So we've seen a bump in Q3 due to integration of Deimos operations. Is most of that lift over? And going forward, do you expect it to be growing at a quicker pace than in 2014?
Yeah, I'm going to have Issa answer that question, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel. Again, yeah, we're not providing forward-looking guidance on our financial projections. The lift obviously was there in this quarter, and that is a combination of both here at Earthcast and at Deimos. And for now, that is the new level that we'll have on a going forward basis. But no further comment on how to view all that going forward.
Okay, thanks. How do you roughly think about the timing of converting the MOU to binding contracts? Is it fair to say that it converts ahead of construction? Is that a loose way to think about it?
Yeah, certainly. That's exactly it. These will be converted ahead of construction. I don't you know, we don't want to get into timing and start to set expectations of when these will convert. I think we have two right now. They're coming along well. There's others in the pipeline, of course. There's, you know, roughly a dozen other groups in the funnel. But getting into too many specifics as to when these are going to convert, I think would be a little premature at this stage. Certainly, these will convert before construction, before the construction of the Constellation, for sure.
Okay. And just perhaps an update on the web platform. Any new use cases for your data, and when do you think is the right time to launch it publicly?
Yeah, I'll have we actually have George Tice, our CTO, in the room, and he can give some comments on that question.
Yeah, so you know, our web platform at this stage, we already are operating with a number of developers. It's gone from a closed beta stage, as Scott mentioned, which is really by invite only and NDAs and all that, which you do at the very early phase of development. And so we've now transitioned to it's an open beta. People are coming on and they're using it actively now, and we're rolling out new features as we go, and we're getting really very good feedback from the developers, and that's how we're deciding what features really matter and so on. But really now it's about we're putting the data in there from MRC, from Deimos, and that's what the developers want to see, and frankly it's going very well.
Operator?
Thank you. The next question is from Doug Taylor from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good evening. First question for me, there was a report a couple weeks back signaling some appetite from the U.S. government for new geospatial data to supplement the existing set it has, mostly from Digital Globe. Can you talk about your sales effort into the U.S. government? Are you happy with the current sales force and distributors you have into that market, or are you considering beefing up investment there?
Yeah, thanks, Doug. Wade will answer that question for us.
Hey, Doug. Hey, welcome to the team.
Thank you.
We have, as you would expect, a very substantive sales and marketing and BD effort into the U.S. It's really by far the most important market in the world. The head of NGA, a guy by the name of Robert Cardillo, has been really quite vocal in his desire to position the organization, NGA, that he runs, which on its own is the most important customer in the world, really at the forefront of these kinds of customers in terms of being able to take advantage of some of the major new trends and technologies and emerging players in this industry. And so they have a very, very strong relationship and partnership with Digital Globe, as you would expect, which is right, but they're also opening up the sort of playing space to some of us new guys. And so we're very much in that mix. And frankly, we've been just delighted and very, very pleased with how those discussions are taking place.
Okay. The $100 million in firm backlog that you talked about for both data sales and engineering services, I just want to understand some of the puts and takes there. Does that still include the remainder of the $65 million engineering contract that's being repurposed as part of an MOU here?
It does.
Okay. Thanks. That's helpful. The last question for me, you've got a bunch of your CapEx has now been shifted to the income statement. Can you just comment on what you expect the maintenance CapEx before any new launches in the interim here, kind of the level you see going forward?
Yeah, I'll have Issa give a little more color there.
Thanks, Scott. Certainly, we don't expect a lot of maintenance CapEx. It's going to be very minimal on the current Gen 1 cameras, and as we proceed into the Constellation, that will be development. There will be no CapEx on that until we have the customer contracts completed and moving forward. Is that
that's helpful.
Yeah,
I think so. All right, thanks. I'll pass the line.
Thank you. The next question is from Stephen Lee from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I joined a little bit late, so you may have addressed those already. But I got a few questions. The strong revenue performance this quarter, is there some lumpiness we have to factor in here? So maybe revenues decline next quarter, or given your backlog, you expect ongoing growth sequentially quarter over quarter?
Yeah, I mean, so we don't want to give guidance, and so we're not going to suggest what revenue is going to be for Q4. Weather does play into Earth observation. And as things are cloudy, you can't actually image as fast as you could during the summer, typically. And so revenue recognition, data delivery, things like that are impacted. So you don't want to come on and say the revenue next quarter is going to be lower or higher than where we are. To your point, we do have a significant backlog, which we're very pleased with. That backlog, we think, is growing. Generally, it's a little harder to take pictures in the winter than it is in the summer because clouds. So you can draw some assumptions from that, but I don't think we want to go too much deeper into that.
Okay, no, that helps. And the backlog data point you gave, $100 million, can you say what it was last quarter, Scott?
No, we can't. It's growing. I mean, and, you know, as we mentioned before, this is the first quarter that we have Deimos in the mix. We've got about 75 days of Deimos results in. That, of course, backlog does include contracts that Deimos has, but I don't think we want to say what it was before, other than, frankly, it's growing.
Okay. And can you also talk about the potential impact from Digital Globe strategy pivot recently, moving away from vertical to focus on their own web platform?
Yeah, I don't think we want to get into that on this call. I mean, this is, they're doing what they do, but that doesn't impact what we do here.
Okay, and then just one last one, maybe is given the accounting changes here on the EBITDA, how much revenues you need to be break-even now?
Again, Stephen, that's just straightforward guidance that we won't be answering on this call.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Yael Afir from Dundee Capital Market. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just to follow up on some of the U.S. commentary made earlier, in the report they talked about not only seeking new data suppliers, but also analytics and other services partners. Is that something obviously you guys are trying to position for? And also, are you seeing the same trend with other governments globally, and are you participating in some of the processes there?
Hey, y'all. It's Wade here again. Yeah, in fact, what you're doing here is you're putting your finger on really what is one of the major new trends, the big, big developments in this industry globally. And in fact, in some cases, government is actually coming to this table a little late. The private sector is actually, I mean, on the demand side, the private sector is really pushing a lot of this innovation on the analytics side. So as you know, our platform is being built really in very large measure to address that kind of opportunity. And so very much indeed, we do see that as serving both commercial and indeed governmental customers in North America and around the world.
Okay, great. And then I might as well ask this question. I don't know if you guys will respond, but obviously there was some news reports that Kazakhstan was looking to use you guys for radar imagery. I guess the question mark is, are they using you guys for the constellation or is it other services work? And hopefully you can answer, but if not, I understand.
Yeah, so unfortunately can't comment on that at all.
Okay. And just lastly, before I pass the line again, beyond just like we're talking about constellation and data services, Wade, you just spoke about the enterprise demand here for analytics. Can you just talk about, obviously, this is a new channel for this market specifically, but demand has obviously been large. You guys are talking about increasing the number of app developers that are creating these applications. When should we expect to see kind of revenue ramp without forward guidance, but revenue kind of lift here from the enterprise side of the equation for your business?
I'm not sure we're entirely comfortable saying, to be frank. Some of this is a little bit tactical. And some of it has to do with how we choose to bring the platform to market. And there's some kind of critical strategic choices there that that will affect how we do that. And I think we'd just like to keep that in our pocket for a little while longer.
Okay, great. Finally, before I pass the line, one last thing. Any way you guys can split the revenue from the data side between either Damus and Legacy or between the low end and the high end?
Yeah, I mean, that's not how we manage it. You know, and we talked about this before, of course, there's lots of cross-selling. Customers buy all kinds of different data sets. Some customers buy from Damus one, and then they, at the same time, they're bidding on HRC stuff. So it's not specifically broken down by sensor, by Earthcast, by Damus. It's, we manage it. We report it like we manage it, which is engineering and Earth observation data, and that's how we report it.
Okay. I'm not sure if you said this, but did you guys talk about the mapping contracts you talked about last quarter and earlier in the call? Was that something that was recognized this quarter with the MRC, or is that still ongoing?
We didn't talk about it. What's the exact question?
Last quarter, you talked about how you're doing countrywide mapping projects with the MRC. I'm just wondering if you've already recognized revenue in this quarter, or is that something that's still coming?
It was recognized.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. I'll pass the line.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Noel Atkinson from Claris Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Just a housekeeping question here. Was there any catch-up in the recognition of the Russian deferred revenue in the quarter? Or is that sort of $5.7 million the number that we should be using going forward every quarter?
That's the number that you should be using on a going forward basis.
Okay. And was there also any catch-up on, like, the post the acquisition of Damus, was there any catch-up of revenue from prior quarters or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from David McFadden from Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Just a question on the recognition of revenue from, say, Damus or the cameras on the ISS. Is any of this revenue recurring, like you've partly completed the job and we're going to see some more in Q4, maybe Q1, or is the revenue recognized in this quarter complete and you have to get new contracts? Just wondering about whether some of this will keep rolling into the next quarter too.
Okay. Hi, David. It's Issa here. I'll answer that question. We have a number of different customers on across all the sensors, and some are large collections off of one sensor. And as we deliver against those large collections, we recognize the revenue under what's allowed under IFRS. So on the larger contracts, you will get multiple revenue recognition as we continue to deliver against the requirements of the customer and under the terms and conditions of that contract. The smaller ones will recognize it once when we complete that order.
Okay. I jumped on the call a bit late. I apologize. What's the CapEx outlook now if you're not doing the cameras on the NASA side? I would imagine the CapEx outlook would be pretty small, and if you're in an MOU, or sorry, any satellite constellation, CapEx would be funded by MOUs, no?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's, this is part of the rationale that we outlined in some of the discussion before, is that the CapEx will now go down, repurposed, of course, but it'll go down to a certain extent, and I think that's the answer to the question.
Okay. And it should be fairly minimal, right?
Depends what you mean by minimal, but it's certainly going down.
Okay. And then any timing on when you might be able to convert an MOU to a definitive agreement on the constellation? Like, I thought it might happen 2015, or is it going to be H1 2016? I don't know if you want to be pinned down on timing, but, you know, obviously Mark would love to know.
Yeah, of course they would. And these are, we talked about this before, long, technical, lots of different stakeholder type agreements. We've started some of them a year ago, and we've done two things. One is we've both filled the funnel. There's you know, a dozen or so interested groups, all in different stages of discussions, and then we've moved two of them through to these MOUs for a total of about $370 million. When they move to definitive binding agreements, they will certainly be announced. I don't think we want to give any dates as to when that'll happen, but I think we can say two things. One is the funnel is very big, and we're incredibly happy with the progress so far.
Okay, so there was a bit of a news item out of Kazakhstan. I think it was about 2 weeks ago or so. You increased the MOUs with this release to two. Can you disclose, was Kazakhstan included in one of those two MOUs?
Yeah, so that question was asked previously on the call, and no, we don't want to provide any comment on that.
Okay, I apologize for that. Okay, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. The next question is from Jonathan Lowe from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Can you is the backlog about 50-50 engineering data? Can you give us that?
Yeah, no, we're not going to break the backlog out. This is the first time we've given any kind of backlog, and we said it's at $100 million plus another $30 million or so in options over and above that, which isn't particularly unusual in this industry. We don't want to get into further specifics because this kind of some of this we would consider to be somewhat competitive information, and so we don't want to be talking too broadly about how the revenue split is and how this plays out. This is kind of how we run the business, and talking about that level of specificity on the backlog would frankly not be good for Earthcast.
Okay, that's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. The next question is from Donald Beezer from Manchester Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. The backlog on the data side is quite exciting, but I'm not familiar with exactly how the backlog works in your industry. I mean, what does it mean? When do you actually get revenue? How does it guarantee you having revenue in the future? What does an option mean? I mean, these are promising numbers, but I don't quite understand what's required for it to come to revenue.
So a couple different things. Often the case is you sign 2 to 3 year agreements with customers, and they'll say it's so much revenue per year, and then on top of that they'll say, and in fact we may want to extend this for another year, or we may want more data, and that would be the option. The revenue is recognized as you take imagery of Earth from space and you deliver it to the customers and they receive it. So there's the contracts. The contracts are typically multi-year. There's options to extend those contracts and to put more to kind of broaden the data set in there. And revenue is recognized as you take pictures and you deliver to the customers and they accept it. And so things like clouds delay how fast you can take that pictures because you obviously didn't get a picture. When it's crystal clear outside, that speeds up revenue recognition because the imagery capture has been accelerated, if that makes sense.
And just to add to that, disclosure, I mean, on the engineering services side, we'll have a separate set of criteria for revenue recognition according to the statement of work that's being provided against that contract, and we'll have specific milestones within the contract to allow us to determine what revenue to recognize when.
So have you recognized any revenue from backlog to date?
Yes. We have contracts. As we image, the backlog is decreased. As we sign more contracts, the backlog is increased. And so I'm a little confused by the question, I guess. We have contracts. There's $100 million in backlog right now. And as we deliver on that imagery, we recognize revenue. And at the same time, of course, we're signing more contracts that go into the backlog for next quarter.
What percentage of the backlog is from Demios acquisition?
Yeah, so we're not going to break that out. I mean, we talked about that before. We don't break out backlog between Earthcast and Deimos, between different sensors. This is total contract, and frankly, giving that kind of information to the market, to other competitors, would not be in the best interest of Earthcast.
Good. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from Aga Dulewski from Elite Financial Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, guys. Congratulations on growing the company and building the revenue. And I have a question for ESA. Specifically, you mentioned about non-cash revenue that has been expensed. So can you please elaborate on that and tell me why was it expensed versus going to receivables? And the second question is, are you going to collect that revenue in terms of cash? And what portion of that $15 million has been non-cash?
Thanks. Let me try to provide better information on that. So this is specifically related to our partnership on the ISS and the provider. So there's two components there, the $5.75 million roughly that was recognized as revenue and expenses are both non-cash. They will never be realized in any cash payment. This is just a valuation of the services that they are providing to us and a valuation of the value of the data that they are perceiving from the cameras as well. So it's truly just an in and out non-cash amount to value each person's contribution to the joint project we're doing on the ISS.
Right. So is it part of that $15 million?
The intangible assets that's on there, it's part of the camera equipment, not part of the intangible assets.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time, and I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Larson.
Yeah, thanks, Samantha. So thanks, everyone. We appreciate you guys joining us. We appreciate the questions. Happy to answer, of course. We're going to wrap up our Q3 quarterly call and wish you all the best. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.